Welcome to the Consilium Podcast Lakeside, a place where you can kick off your shoes and enjoy great conversation by the water's edge. I'm your host, Diane Bailey. My guest today is David Rupert. David is currently an author at Patheos, where he engages in thoughtful conversations about faith, culture, and life. He is the co-author of 3 books and has penned more than 1,500 articles. Like many of you, David adopted a word for the first of last January, something that would define his life and give him some focus. His word for the year was yes. Now to him, he felt like saying yes to God meant maybe some awards, some accolades, some successes, maybe some contracts, an extra piece of pie maybe. But God was starting to tell a story in a different way. Saying yes helped him to meet prisoners, refugees, and people from different races and cultures and beliefs. It took him to the Middle East twice, where he is getting ready to return a third time. He is still learning the lessons that God is providing for him. Listen to this amazing story. Remember, today is part one, and next week we will have part two. I think you're going to enjoy this as much as I did. Welcome, David, to the lake. I'm so glad you're here.
It's good to be here. The weather's fine.
Weather's always perfect at the lake. Always perfect at the lake.
Yeah.
As they heard on the introduction, David is a really pretty well-known writer and has had the most wonderful adventures lately that have scared me half to death, but I'm so glad I can listen to it and go through it vicariously with him to all these places. But start us out with who David is and what you do.
Sure. So I live in Colorado, and I'm trying to experience life in as many ways as possible. Since I was a little boy, I've been able to communicate. My teacher said David quit talking so much, but later on, I was able to turn those gifts into some oratory skills, and in high school and college, competing in different kinds of speech and debate things, and all along I've been writing as well too, and I've been published just in a variety of formats and forums, and just about anywhere I've gone, I've written, and I've been able to write about the journey as I go. And so I'm kind of always looking for the story, and it helps me open my eyes to the world around me, because I'm looking for story, whereas a lot of people are just kind of going through life. I'm asking a lot of questions: why, where, what, who, all those great journalism questions, and it leads me to some really interesting places.
Did you work on the college or high school newspaper? Was that something?
Of course I did that. Yeah.
Yearbook.
The yearbook, that was for the real, that was for the nerds, so we were,
What's a nerd? Because I was on the yearbook.
No, we were the hardcore journalists, and we were exposing everything. And, that was back in the Watergate days. So we all had stars in our eyes, I really got to cut my teeth that way. So I did that kind of stuff, and in college as well too. And started freelancing pretty early. I wrote a lot about contemporary Christian music. I was a music reviewer for a long time, and had a lot of interest in that. And then I turned to deeper things of theology and then cultural. The Christians in society and how to live in this world, but not be in the world, but not of it. And it's a delicate balance that we never really get. It's a lifetime mystery. So I write a lot about that, about the collision of culture and Christianity, and just where we should be at in the middle of it.
That's kind of a deep and crazy place to be, and that kind of blows my mind that is something you thrive on almost. You love that. How did you get to the place where you were doing church and culture?
Well, a lot of it had to do because I took a path early on in my early 20s. I was really thinking about going into the pastorate and had some desires that way, but didn't feel fully called. And then a friend who was a businessman and a Christian, he took me aside and he said, "Well, David, you know, don't feel like you can't serve God if you're not behind a pulpit." He said, "Just remember, wherever you're at in the workplace and whatever job you take, you may be the only sermon that any of those people will ever hear." And so I really took that to heart. And just about any job I had, I was a busboy in a casino, and that was the first time where I actually lived out my faith in the workplace. And I was more about demonstrating my faith than proclaiming it. Although I trained hard to proclaim it in apologetics, I wanted to be a good workplace Christian. And what does that look like? And so that journey in there has kind of taken me into not just being a Christian in the workplace, but being a Christian in the world. And it's
so
easy.
So wait a minute.
Us.
Mm-hmm. What did it look like to work out your faith as a busboy in the casino? I mean,
yeah.
What does that look like?
Well, you know, and it's behind, you know, in front, we served really fine food, and we really had a certain image that we were presenting. It was a higher end restaurant in this casino,
right?
And so the forks had to be a certain way, and the napkins had to be a certain way, and I had to hold my towel in a certain way. But behind the scenes, once you got, you know, you had that beautiful exterior, you had, you know, where the sausage was made, where all the workers were, and there was a lot of darkness there, and a lot of drug use, and a lot of worldly living, and I was able to stand tall and to be able to share my faith even at the age of 17 or 18 years old in that environment, and so that helped me cut my teeth for the rest of the world.
Wow, I bet that was hard standing up. I've had people I know that have worked in the back of restaurants like that and seen some of the stuff that's gone on. And that's a really big place to stand tall, especially as a teenager.
Well, yeah. And it's a reminder that, you know, I think wherever you're at as a Christian, and sometimes we think that we have to be in a ministry or doing something with God is the first name, God is the last name, Jesus is the middle name, you know, just, you know, that in order to be actually living out for God. And actually, he's not called us to that. He's called us right where we are, you know, so wherever we're doing and whatever profession. And I found myself eventually carrying mail for the Postal Service. I did that for a long time. And then I was later on a supervisor and then a small town postmaster. And now I'm in a different managerial position, and all along the way there, I've never pulled out one drawer for my faith and pull out another drawer for my work. It's all one big sock drawer, and it all goes in, and that's just who I am, and it makes life a lot easier when I don't have to separate things out.
Right.
I am a Christian, and this is what I do. I don't. It's the same way as I am a man, and I am 6 foot tall and a slim 175 pounds. Well, maybe not, but that's who,
that's close enough.
Yeah, that's who I am, you know, and I am a Christian,
right,
and that's just
right.
Part of who I am in the workplace. And so, you know, that's I first had to learn that myself, and then I encourage other people to live that way. And that rolls over to the rest of life too, that, you know, we think we have to have this distinctive lifestyle. We just simply have to have a lifestyle that's authentic.
Right. You know, we've got so many superstar Christians nowadays. And my slogan years ago became, we were never meant for glory.
Right.
It's too weighty. It's too heavy a thing. And it will crush us every time. Our glory is for God, not for ourselves.
That's right. Yeah, and I think if we simply do what's right, God hasn't called us to superstardom. God hasn't called us to do incredible, amazing things. He's called us to do faithful things. And I think if we concentrate on the faithfulness, then He'll bless.
Right. There's nothing wrong with having a large platform. It just depends on where your focus is. Is it for you to be in the spotlight, or is it for the Lord to be in the spotlight? And the same thing applies to our everyday work. Like you said, it's what you're faithful with in front of you that makes the right difference in the bigger things and the smaller things. Now, when we first met each other, we both were writers, you more than me, for The High Calling. I did more photography for it than I did writing for it. But how did you get started with The High Calling?
Well, years ago I wrote...
Back up for just a second. Tell us what The High Calling is, because not everybody's going to be familiar with that publication. And then tell us how you got started with it.
Sure. The High Calling was a online digital provider of encouragement for people who wanted to live their faith out in the world. And they're no longer operating under those auspices, but it really was a great thing, as a lot of people were able to find a home, you know, that if, with all these kinds of things that we're talking about living out your faith. So I had written a book called J-O-B, Jesus on Business, and that's how I was found by The High Calling, and they eventually asked me to come on staff, and there I was able to curate and find and encourage writers from all across the United States, bloggers, people writing from home that just had something authentic to say. We never concentrated on high-power writers, but just common people who could give a little bit of insight. And that was really a great experience, and it opened up other doors with Crossways Publications, with Lifeway. I've been published a number of times in their publications because of The High Calling. Led me to a couple of books that I was able to help write. And so it was really a good experience in that regard, just to encourage people just to live out their faith.
Now, where are you writing now?
So right now, my primary writing is at Patheos. And Patheos is the world's largest religious website. They get 10 million visits a month. And when I say religious, I mean they take all comers. So there's Wiccans, there's Buddhists, there's Hindus, there's Catholic, Protestant, Evangelical, even an atheist forum. There's all kinds of places for people to have their say, and it's really quite the free-for-all. I liken it a little bit to Paul going to Mars Hill and speaking the truth, and that's what I feel a little bit like there. That's my mission, is to go into this battleground and speak truth. And so there I'm able to write about things about culture and to ask probing questions and to engage in interesting conversations. And, you know, for example, I just had a discussion about millennials and how more and more of them are voting to be socialists. They think socialism is cool because it kind of sounds like social justice, right?
Right.
So, and I asked the question, have you really given up hope? Because that's what I think when I hear that they've given up hope in institutions, they've given up hope in the church, they've given up hope in traditional economics as I've grown up with, they've given up hope in government and they're ready to cast their lot to something cool like socialism. 53% of millennials would vote for a socialist. So I'm able to engage in those conversations and have a Christian perspective on economics and a Christian perspective on you know, what is socialism really, what does it really mean?
What does it really look like? Do they realize that it means surrendering almost all your control?
Yeah. And another really interesting conversation we recently had was, does Christianity promote intolerance? And a lot of people call us intolerant. They call us intolerant because we hold to an absolute truth.
An uncompromising truth.
Yes. And I'm sorry that I hold that position, but Jesus held it first when he said, I am the truth and I am the life and I am the way. He didn't say I'm a truth, a life, a way. He said, I'm it. No man comes to the Father except by me. So, you know, Jesus kind of drew the line in the sand, and either you're on one side of him or you're on the other side of him. And it's very important for us to make sure that that distinctive is true. And so engaging in those conversations, it was really interesting how many people came into the conversation and said, yes, you Christians are all a bunch of intolerant people, and that's why I hate all of you. Well,
gosh,
you know what? Jesus said we'd be hated because of our belief and our trust in him, and that's to be expected. If people aren't hating us, then we're not preaching the truth.
But they don't see that as we speak the truth that may not be palatable for them, we're also showing love and going out and digging wells and feeding the poor. And there's so many things that we are doing that they don't even see.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the other side of truth, isn't it? You know, truth and love, and they go hand in hand. And if we fall too much on the truth side and don't give enough of the love side, then that's not the full gospel. And if we fall too much on the love side and don't bother to give them the truth, then that's not the gospel either. The woman who was caught in adultery, Jesus stood in between her and the rock throwers. And he said, stop, stop, stop. And that was his love. He loved this woman to save her life. And as he asked her those probing questions and found out the truth, he lifted her up and he said, woman, go and sin no more. So there was truth there. He didn't just give her a pass. He also called her to repentance. So there is that balance that we need to issue a hand of love to the world around us and at the same time call them to repentance.
Amen. Now, your writing led you to one of the scariest places I know of. And I was praying for you the whole time you were going there and while you were coming back. So tell us how you got the invitation to go to Jordan and the Middle East.
Well, it all started. I made a New Year's resolution. I had turned 50, and I looked back at my life, and I decided that I'd lived quite the safe life. I had surrounded myself in suburbia. I had surrounded myself with Christian friends and Christian activities and Christian books and Christian movies. And I said, God, this year I'm going to say yes to every single opportunity that you put in front of me. No questions asked. If you put something in front of me, I'm going to do it. And a mere 5 days into that resolution on January 5th, I received an invitation from the country of Jordan to come and explore and to write about their Christian heritage. Well, my first instinct was like, I'm not really into going into the Middle East now. And second of all, you know, I'm not a travel writer, and I really don't have any background in the Middle East. I've never written anything about that. What's my expertise? And, you know, who am I to do something like that? But then I started questioning it and wondering. It's like, well, not only was this an invitation, they were going to pay for me to come there to do that. They would pay my trip and feed me and put me up and, you know, treat me like, you know, like visiting royalty.
Wow.
They selected 9 other Christian writers to do that. And I certainly was among the least qualified to go there. But then God reminded me of what I said to him, that I would say yes. So I chose to follow God, to say yes. And yes, I'll go. I may not be qualified. I may not know what I'm doing or where I'm going. But so in 10 days, they took us around Jordan, and I was able to really find out that Jordan is the other holy land. Israel does a wonderful job of marketing themselves, but just on the other side of the Jordan River is this rich tapestry of Christian heritage. I stood on the hill where Elijah was taken, the chariots of fire, and I stood in the very river where John the Baptist baptized Jesus, and went to the to where the Ammonites were and drank out of Ruth's well that she drew water from, and got to see all of this rich country that's really something. If you were looking for a different kind of Holy Land experience that's honestly safer than Israel and has just as much. It doesn't have, of course, the Via Dolorosa or the time of Jesus, but you'll see an awful lot there, and it's very enriching. So, you know, they took us to all these places and these old ancient churches that have withstood time and the Christian witness that they've been able to uphold for all these years. But what really got me is they started introducing us to some of these places where there were refugees. And if you know your map at all, Jordan straddles. It sits in between Syria and Iraq. Those two places have produced more than their share of refugees in the last few years because of war. And Jordan has there's about 3 million refugees that are living in their country right now.
Wow!
But so as I met these people, I began to experience a side of refugees that I had never experienced before, and these were Christian refugees. I don't know if you know this, Diane, but 10% of the Middle East are Christians. You know, we kind of think it's this whole Islamic enclave, but there are still tens of millions of Christians, fellow believers, brothers and sisters that are in the Middle East that are suffering right now. They're suffering the normal things that you have to go through with war, with the interruption of war, the interruption of water and food supplies and fuel and the uncertainty of the battle around you. But these people have even deeper concerns because of their faith. ISIS, as you know, has targeted Christians. They've burned churches. They've tortured men and women. They've enslaved young girls and young boys. And, you know, the Western press has kind of, you know, you've heard about it a little bit, but they've turned a blind eye. And I was exposed to this world as these people escaped those horrors. Mm. And they're urban refugees. You hear, you know, you think about refugee camps. These people aren't necessarily living in the United Nations camps. The United Nations has some very large camps in Turkey, in Lebanon, in northern Jordan. And you've seen some pictures of them that were they're unbelievable, the amount of people there. But Christians that go to these camps fear for their lives, because they have names like Joseph and Nora and Mary, and they have Christian names and Christian surnames, and they don't cover their heads, and they wear crosses around their necks, and they're targeted for their faith by fellow refugees. So they have learned to stay out of that grid. So here's where we get into politics, Diane, is right now the United States is bringing in refugees, and we've seen numbers bandied about 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 refugees. And, you know, and there's a various political thought on that, but they're drawing their refugees from the United Nations coffers, from the people that have registered or are in these United Nations camps. Those are the people that the United States is reaching out and bringing over. The problem is that 10% of all the population there is Christian, probably a much higher percent are refugees, are not in that system. And that's why we don't see our brothers and sisters being brought into the United States. So here I was learning about these situations over there. And I came home and it's like, Lord, what am I going to do with all this knowledge? You know, who am I to speak out for these things? Cause I'm just a government worker. You know, I've written about faith in the workplace. You know, I got, you know, I can write, you know, nice little illustrations and, you know, talk a good game. But, well, very soon after that, there was a famous picture of a boy who washed up on a beach, and yes, you've all seen that picture.
Ann Voskamp had it on her site, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And it went around the world. And I had already made all these contacts in Jordan. I knew the players. I knew the people. I had written about them. And it just displayed the human traffic of people escaping this land. And I got on an airplane 7 days later and went back to Jordan, and I specifically just interviewed Christian refugees. That's all I wanted to talk to, was these people that were being impacted. Not that Muslims aren't lives that matter. They are. But I believe Scripture calls us that our first calling is to help our brothers and sisters. And I didn't see the United States doing that, and I certainly didn't see the church doing that, because we don't know that they exist. So that was my goal, to do that. And I interviewed I spent time with more than 100 Christian refugee families. I wrote about 30 stories about them, and they really went around the world helping tell the story of these people that had been forgotten. And some of them were just unbelievable stories of faith and persecution, and at the same time, perseverance. It was just an amazing experience. And I'm going to go again this spring, because there's new pressures. Syria, Aleppo is being bombed into oblivion. And Iraq, there's Mosul is being retaken. We don't know how long that battle will last. So there's more and more Christians that are being forced out of their homelands. And I'm going to go back and see what I can do. I'm taking money to help buy them blankets and heaters, and helping just tell their stories.
So, okay, what's your goal? What do you think you're going to be able to accomplish going back the second time? Obviously, blankets and supplies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you're going to be able? Do you want to write more articles? Do you want more interviews? What do you want? What will help the cause?
Well, you know, God. Some people, God has blessed, and they're doctors and they're nurses and they're engineers, and there's guys that can build houses, and there's women that can sew dresses. And you know, the only thing I got is words. I just, you know, sometimes I feel a little lame because that's all I can do. But then it's like, this is what I have got. And so I'm going to go, and I'm going to use my words to help tell the story, so that other people, perhaps those engineers and those doctors and those people making dresses and drilling, you know, building homes, can be motivated to do that. So this is my gift, and this is how I'm using it. You know, and I've embraced it. I've embraced my weakness, so that God can use it for his strength and his ability.
So David, what would you, what would be one word that you would encourage the listeners with? What would you tell them if you could sit down with them and say, you know, this is what I want you to know? What would be that one last thought?
Well, my last thought on that is to just say yes. I'm starting to learn that that is the ticket to opening up a life of a tremendous promise. God's given us all these promises, but we have to say yes. We have to chase after them. And when he gives us these opportunities, we need to move on them. And just say yes, it doesn't mean that you have to go to the Middle East, but just say yes means that you might have to go across the room. And that's a huge step for you. And those are some things that we can start doing just to bring that gospel message home so that we can really live out God's promises in our lives. And you know, if you're, you know, to me, the Middle East is not frightening, especially now that I've been there. I'm kind of excited to go back again. But for some of you, it's like, that's the last place I'd ever want to go. And, you know, my wife is not so certain that she wants to go, and that's fine. You know, but she's really good about going across the street and looking for those opportunities. So just take that as a good challenge for this new year, that wherever God leads you, that you will go. And you know what? If you can go no questions asked, God, I don't want to know the benefit. I don't want to know the doubts. I don't want to know the obstacles. I don't want to know why I can't do it. I just know that I'm going to do it. And you pursue it and just wait for God to bless your socks off.
David, thank you so much for being here. Now, there's going to be a part two. I want everybody to listen next week for part two of this conversation. I don't know about you, but this makes me want to say a bigger yes to God, to see what he would do in my life, places he would take me. Scary places, but places with great reward. Maybe it's down the street. Maybe it's across the ocean. But whatever it is, I'm ready to say yes to God. How about you? Thank you for joining us today on the Consilium Podcast, where the air is always warm, the water cool, and the conversation is inspiring. I'm your host, Diane Bailey. You can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, or on the web, www.theconcilium.com. Until next time, have a great day.